Monday night edition of the Dunked On Basketball Podcast. We've got more of the team's trade deadline previews to get to. Also, some news. Our sponsors today, Movement Watches. You can get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to movementwatches.com/capspace. And Lyft, a company that's been in the news a bit lately, as you may know. Right now, offering our listeners a special deal, 3 free rides up to $10 each. That's a $30 value when you enter that promo code CAPSPACE. Let's get rolling here with a little news. We are a little bit behind the times, but I wanted to weigh in on some of the stories of the last week or so, starting with some of the stuff from the Cavs. Additional reporting from Brian Windhorst indicating that LeBron is at odds with Dan Gilbert over the amount that he's spending. And I think he has a little bit of a point there, LeBron, especially if Gilbert assured him that he was going to spend whatever.
We've been down this road before, though Mickey Arison doing the amnesty on Mike Miller is very different than Dan Gilbert spending a ton of money and going into it. But the way that they've kind of chosen these last couple expenditures, though I don't think LeBron's complaining about using roster spots on Birdman and James Jones, they could have been more aggressive with the taxpayer mid-level exception. They could have used the trade exception a little bit differently. They broke it apart, but we really do have to see on that as well.
Well, I think, I don't know about the taxpayer mid-level, because they used some of that to bring back Richard Jefferson, who of course was a great contributor for them last year. Jefferson was talking about retiring and then decided not to, perhaps.
But do you think that million made the difference for him? Like, if they had used that, because I think it was about a million, because he was getting about 2.5. If he was getting the veteran minimum at his extremely high experience level, and then they would have had that to use on someone else who was better.
Well, they felt like they needed to pay him that, I guess. So we'll put it that way. They also wanted to give Kay Felder a 3-year deal, so that's why part of why they used some of it up on him. They left a little bit of that, about 500,000 unused. They also, any normal team that wasn't concerned about money would have simply just waived Mo Williams and waived Birdman as soon as it was clear that they couldn't play anymore or weren't going to be playing, and use those roster spots for other stuff. I mean, LeBron, this whole thing about needing another playmaker when the defense is the issue. Also, apparently he mentioned Dante Jones as someone who might, like, would not be helping them right now. He had, like, you know, played 3 minutes in the finals where he was okay, but he hasn't been a good NBA player for 5 years, if not longer there. So I do understand where LeBron is coming from, especially if he was assured, as I'm sure he was, that they would spend whatever it took. And then there was a report from Forbes this week leaking some of their NBA franchise value stuff that's coming out later this month, that the Cavs lost like $50 or $60 million last year. And while that may technically be true on a fiscal year basis, how much more is the team worth because LeBron is on it? Also, they're getting a crap load of public financing to redo Quicken Loans Arena that they probably wouldn't get unless LeBron were on the team. So, and also Dan Gilbert is worth $5 billion. With all that, I'm not... This idea that they can't afford it is probably not accurate either. And in fact, they're still making money off of LeBron being there.
They're also making money because I believe they own the casino that is across the street from Quicken Loans Arena. And I'm assuming, considering it's a casino, and with one notable exception, those generally make money, that is benefiting from LeBron being on the team as well. And that does not go on the books in terms of the Forbes and everything else.
Yeah, and it was LeBron's presence the first time around that helped them get that casino built as well, you'll recall. In Chicago, Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade basically had a powwow after they lost to the Hawks in pretty ugly fashion last week. They blew a 10-point lead in the last 3 minutes of the game. They came out, basically said, hey, these young guys don't care enough. They're not playing hard enough, etc. Rajon Rondo then fired back the next day via Instagram, saying that his vets in Boston, KG and Paul Pierce, Ray Allen pointedly omitted from the photo in question, would never have put it on the young players on the team, the young players' work, singling out guys like that, exempting yourself, as Butler and Wade really seemed to do. I mean, that seemed to be the message, is we're doing our jobs, you guys aren't doing yours. And I couldn't remember, Danny, another time when you heard players talk like that about basically, hey, everyone else on the team is a problem. Like, they might say that in code, but they'll at least couch it as like, oh, we've got to do these things better. I mean, can you remember another time where criticism of teammates was that pointed?
Not off the top of my head. And it's also important to note that while some of what Rondo said is, you know, might be going a little bit beyond, and some of it can't be verified, it is true that Dwayne Wade not getting back on defense and is not exactly sending that message of we're doing our part, you do yours.
Yeah, and Wade actually, in later comments than facing the media, I think on Friday, acknowledged that, you know, there's things that everyone could do better. They kind of said they regretted it, but didn't really. And to me, I mean, I totally agreed with every sentiment that Rondo had. Was it smart for him to say that, given his now relatively tenuous job security in the NBA and on this team? Probably not, but I completely agree. Like, there's nothing good that's going to come of calling everyone out like that. And like, it seemed like some of the issues that they had supposedly were Paul Zipser and Nikola Mirotic taking open three-pointers down the end of the game that Wade and Butler set them up for. And like, those guys are on the floor to take open shots. I mean, I realized that Wade and Butler were scoring really well down the end of that game, but like, they made the right play. Like, just you're going to pass up an open shot and throw it right back to this guy who just threw it to you? Like, that's not realistic.
You have a better memory of these sorts of things than I do, but Wade has a distinct history in that he has been a part of a lot of successful teams, but overwhelmingly they had other prominent lead voices in the locker room alongside him, and this is an entirely different situation for him.
So eventually Wade and Butler and Rondo were all fine. Wade and Butler actually did not start their next game, which they lost at home to the Sixers, San Joel Embiid. And Joel actually missed some time last week with a knee contusion, came back, was unbelievable in a home game. I think he put up 32 points in the same game that James Harden had a triple-double with over 50 points that they lost to the Rockets. And now Joel actually is going to miss, it looks like, this. He's not going on this road trip, and looks like he's going to miss more time. I don't know if that's the same knee contusion or not. They are certainly being very cautious with him, but a little bit of a cause for concern here that for a Sixers team that's surging, it's probably better that they lose more games over the course of the year, but it's been really exciting. We hope to see Joel back on the floor soon. A couple little things. Brandon Wright is debuting for Memphis as we are typing this. Wow. I never even write anymore either to make that mistake. As we are recording this, Brandon Wright is debuting. Quincy Acey, late of the Mavs, signed by Brooklyn, I think in the next year too, right? Is that right?
Right. Yeah.
And then the Cavs supposedly in their search for a playmaker per Mark Stein have some interest in Jameer Nelson and Shelvin Mack. I don't know that either of those players are going to solve much in the way of their problems, that they're going to help at the highest levels in the playoffs. Mack is probably a little bit too limited. Nelson too limited defensively. I wouldn't mind it if Denver were to trade him and give Jamal Murray the ball full time as the backup point guard, or maybe even as the starting point guard. But I think with Denver, viewing him as important. I mean, he's starting right now. They're trying to make the playoffs. I don't know if the Cavs have the ammunition to get Nelson, and if they do try to trade for him and pay what it's going to cost, it doesn't seem like it would be a very good deal.
It seems strange to say the ammunition necessary to get Jameer Nelson in 2017, but I guess that's where we are. Oh, one other signing, actually, we should talk about. Chasson Randall signed with the Sixers, rest of the season, and then two more years that look like they're non-guaranteed with specific guarantee dates. I'm waiting for the full details. Shams Charania originally reported it, and why I was intrigued by that is because the Sixers are one of those teams that is below the salary cap floor, and this gives them 15 guys on roster, so that's harder to make a trade or something else. Now, they certainly can, and they could include other players in trades, they could cut somebody on their team, lots of different options, but signing somebody less than a month before the deadline, I found it interesting.
Yeah, well, he's played okay for them, and I think maybe they could even, there's also an indication, a report from Keith Pompey, that the Cavs inquired about TJ McConnell and were rebuffed as well. They offered Jordan McRae, which that'd be a terrible trade. No wonder they turned it down. Kevin Love exited that game against the Thunder on Sunday after a poor first half. Again, back issues. He exited that Warriors game as well with the same problems. You'll remember that back in 2014-15, he struggled throughout the year with back issues. So that's a little bit of a lingering concern for Love. It's tough to shoot when you have a tight back. It's tough for him to be the force on the boards. So that's going to be something to monitor. I mean, he's going to have to be at his full physical potential in the finals. Hopefully he will get well, but again, not what the Cavs need. And he started off the year on fire on three-pointers, now has dropped down to about his career normal. norms, more in the 37% range or so. KP actually wrote a nice piece today about his take on whether they should trade Melo for Love or not, although he didn't have a chance to get into the scenario that I was thinking might make it more realistic, which is the Knicks throwing in some other guys who might help the Cavs this year as well. Although then you run into the problem of potentially matching salary, where the Cavs might have to send back someone like, really, Iman Shumpert would probably have to be involved in that as well. And I don't know that the Knicks can send over a role player who is going to help them much more than Shumpert would. So maybe that could end up being unrealistic, unless the Cavs, again, are willing to just pay absolutely through the nose. And then there's also the issue of Carmelo Anthony's trade bonus. Under the new CBA, he would be able to just waive that to facilitate the trade. Now you can only do it to actually fit in to make the math work, like Roy Hibbert did with the Lakers. So that is also a complicating factor if they're going to do that. But maybe this is something that, depending on what happens this playoffs, if the Cavs really, you know, just flame out against the Warriors, Love doesn't play well, maybe that's something that could be revisited. All right, anything else? Oh, Avery Bradley has been out with a strained Achilles for quite some time now as well. That's a concern for Boston.
Especially because the other teams falling back to the field is opening up the door for Boston to be a little bit more feisty at the top of it. I don't expect them to really push for the two seed, but it is certainly possible. But they need Avery Bradley to do that.
Yeah, the report over the weekend was that he's just doing like anti-gravity work, pool work. And we've seen players miss a lot of time with strained Achilles. Remember Mike Conley from last year basically missed 3 months at the end of the year. So hopefully it won't be to that sort of a level, although it has given Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart a chance to blossom a little bit more. But hard for the Celtics to make the kind of defensive improvements they would like to with Bradley on the shelf. All right, we'll get to, I'm going to do the Southeast Division here to start off, trade deadline preview. But first, this from Lyft. Lyft is a ride-sharing app that gets you a ride in minutes on demand 24/7, and it costs less than a cab. I personally have used Lyft since 2013, long before they were a sponsor. I really have been a fan of it. I found that their drivers generally have been friendlier, just in my personal experience, than with other ride-sharing apps. You can also tip in the app. That leads to happier drivers if that's what you want to do. And while Lyft is not the biggest ride sharing app, they are the fastest growing and the highest rated one. So if you want to go out, you want to avoid drunk driving, you don't want to have to bum a ride. A lot of people just don't have cars at all and will use Lyft. I think it's way better than getting a cab. They usually show up in around 3 minutes on average. And at the moment, Lyft is offering our listeners a special deal, 3 free rides up to $10 each, a $30 value when you enter the promo code CAPSPACE. We will be talking about that quite a bit, of course, as we get into the trade deadline preview. Promo code CAPSPACE will get you 3 free rides up to $10 each. And most of the rides that I take are less than $10, just short trips within the city. So download that free Lyft app today, enter promo code CAPSPACE in the payment section, and you can start with those 3 free rides up to $10 each. Well, this to me, where we're starting here, is the most interesting team on the board, the Atlanta Hawks. And they've been complicated by the fact that they're actually playing well right now. It would be a lot easier if they were just putzing around 500, maybe like fighting for the 8th seed, but they're looking like the odds-on favorite at the moment to be the 4th seed. And I had a lot of discussions about them at the D-League Showcase. What are they going to do? Do people buy that Paul Millsap is off the market? Who's making the decisions there? Is it Bud? Is it Wes Wilcox? A lot of questions that we talked about. I mean, not a ton of consensus, but the point that I think came up a lot was, especially when you have Coach Bud nominally the one who's in control, and this team, I can't think of a team ever that has been on track to be a 4 seed that just dumped players. And I guess they're on track to be the 5th seed. The Wizards have overtaken them now in the 538 projections, but still, a top 5 seed in a conference to just punt on a season seems like something that would be nearly unprecedented and not something that this Atlanta market could deal with.
Their situation is far more complicated than the Nuggets, which I think is the other one that's really interesting. I prefer Denver because they could be buyers and or sellers, which is different than the Hawks, because the Hawks can't really be buyers. Like, that's just not something that's going to happen. But the Hawks have far more tantalizing talent because Paul Millsap is an all-NBA talent. He's an all-star, can make a major difference, and he has a player option that is going to be declined. So the Hawks have to make a very complicated decision with him, and it comes on the heels of them losing another all-star, all-NBA caliber talent in Al Horford for absolutely nothing. So if there were a situation where a player could do that, but I think they would have to be sure or pretty close to it that Millsap was not going to re-sign.
They do have some extra firepower in the tank if they wanted to actually get better this year. I just don't think that there's a way to realistically do that and challenge Cleveland. I mean, they've got that lotto protected first from Minnesota in 2018. They've got Cleveland's protected 1 through 10 in 2019. From the Korver and Adrian Payne trades, respectively. But yeah, I don't see them firing away with any of those assets to try and improve the team near to just what you're going to get into the second round. They probably can't catch Boston or Toronto for the second and third seeds. So now you're just going to try to get home court in the first round and then beat Cleveland, which you're unlikely to do. Is there, and I think that the consequence of them winning is they're going to listen on Millsap for sure still, but it's going to take something that really they feel is going to change the direction of their franchise going forward after this. If it's just, well, we can't let them leave for nothing, so we have to say we got something. If all they're getting is something rather than something that's really good, I think they just hold on to him. And also, maybe his market dries up, maybe they just re-sign him in the offseason as well, although that would mean that they basically would have no cap space.
I can understand why they would want to play it from a position of strength, and I probably would handle it a little bit differently than that just because I'm more pragmatic, unless they had some sort of indication that he's going to resign. But again, the problem with him resigning is if he's amenable to resigning, it's going to be at or near his maximum. It's not going to be this, you know, huge discount. Paul Millsap has taken.
Yeah, but maybe the years wouldn't be too bad. Maybe that's sure. possible.
That's possible as well. And also because
we Millsap, don't know. We don't know for sure.
Right. Millsap is the center piece, but they are all the kind of constellation of other players, because Atlanta, other than the players that either re-signed or signed this offseason, almost the entire rest of their team are going to be free agents this summer. So Tabo Cephalosha, Mike Muscala, Tim Hardaway Jr., all those players could be either kept for a run, whether that's making it to the first or second round, or all or some ceremoniously dumped on teams for decent value.
Yeah, you mentioned Cephalosha, Mike Dunleavy, as well as some of that they could move on to. Mike Dunleavy actually playing very well for the Hawks.
He is.
Since he went there. Hardaway has a low cap hold. Mike Muscala has a cap hold for the minimum, and they will have full bird rights on him if they want to bring him back. So he's an asset in that respect. And I think he's a solid backup center. The way he shoots the ball, he could be useful for them. He's not restricted anymore. I think there was talk that they even could try to move on from Dwight Howard. Kent Bazemore is a guy who could have some value, like really tear things down. But it just doesn't seem like they're at that point. So given that fact, the potential trade that I floated on Twitter that everyone hated on both sides appeared to be Toronto seems like the logical destination for Millsap. Terrence Ross, Jared Sullinger to make the salaries work. I don't want to trade away Patterson if I'm them, because I want to play those guys together against Cleveland. And then the worst of your two first rounders this year as Toronto, and Norman Powell. Something along those lines. Powell, maybe he's too much to throw in there, because they would need some kind of a backup wing, especially because Damari Carroll is growing more rickety by the day here. And they're giving up on Ross at that point. Ross basically has to be in it again to make the salaries work. If it were that, let's say, and I mean, the consensus seemed to be almost be that that's too much for Toronto to give up for a guy who's 32 and that they're going to need to pay through the nose for to re-sign. But just from Atlanta's perspective, is that enough for you?
Yes. It provides wing depth, which is the most scarce positional group in the entire NBA. It clears their books a lot. Sullinger's a one-year contract. Terrence Ross is reasonably paid. Whether the Hawks would want to keep him or trade him, they could do either with him. It's not a bad contract. And if they got Norman Powell, I mean, he's on a wonderful contract. He's a really good player. I think he could fit beautifully with what the Hawks are doing. They would have a lot of bites at that apple, and they would have a hole at power forward, but they would have the money to spend on it if they wanted to go near term. And they would have an army of wings that they could evaluate over the summer, make the right decisions on, and then they still have draft assets and they would be getting a first from Toronto in the trade.
Yeah, that's an interesting question too when you think about the summer. Is Millsap's cap hold is $30 million. That's basically eats up all their space. They would have about $30 million in space, maybe could get up to 35 if they move on from Hardaway and move on from Dunleavy as well and stretch him. Could they just do better with $35 million than re-signing Paul Millsap for that amount of money?
If they think of themselves as a younger Schroeder team, as much as Dwight Howard is a different kind of presence with Schroeder still developing and their young wings. I think that's entirely possible because Millsap's contract is all present value. His next contract is right. All, you know, the first year or two. And if the Hawks, we know right now, they're not going to be good enough in that first year or two to contend for a championship. So depending on how they define success, I certainly would make an argument that they could, not that they would, but that they could do better.
Yeah. And there's also been talk that Millsap was being pursued by some of the bad teams in the West who are, I shouldn't say bad, but that are kind of lower rung playoff contenders. I mean, it really seems like New Orleans isn't going to be close enough to get into that, especially by the trade deadline. You mentioned they have this road heavy schedule coming up. Denver, unclear what exactly an offer from them might look like. So we'll talk about whether it would make sense for Toronto to do what would be kind of a Godfather-ish offer, like the one I'm talking about, when we get to their preview later in the week. Anything else that you wanted to mention about these guys?
With their power dynamics in the front office, if they make a move for Millsap, what they prioritize in terms of assets coming back will tell us a lot about what they think of their own timeline. Because if they get picks, if they get really young guys, that's something meaningfully different than somebody like Terrence Ross.
Yeah, and that really goes back to, I think, the existential question about this Hawks team. Since they won those 60 games, it was clear after that year that they were going to be regressing the next year. They won 48 last year, on pace for 44 this year. What is your goal as a team? Are you all about just winning championships and you're willing to tear it down? Because this is not, there's no way that with the guys they have in this roster right now, they're getting into championship contention. I don't think. I mean, even if you're talking about, they have some young guys, but these are not upside guys like Prince, Bembry. Like, those guys are just kind of more out of Hawks University 3-and-D guys potentially. Whereas Bembry maybe less so on the three part, but there's nobody on this roster that's like a potential superstar that's going to get you to be like a consistent 50 win team from here on out. But they have been making the playoffs okay. Like, they have like pretty good defense. Maybe some of these guys can grow and they can stay around this level for 3 or 4 years. You okay with that? Can the Atlanta market handle a rebuild off of that? You know, who knows? I guess there's also the idea that just if you want to do that rebuild, it's almost just easier to hold on to Millsap and then lose him in free agency and just say, well, you know what? Like, we tried, we lost him, we couldn't do anything about it, as opposed to just like, you are the one who decided to trade him away. That's not the way I would be handling it, but there is that element to it also.
I don't think that's as, I'm sure that front offices sometimes think that way, but if you're going to be worse than you were before, fans are going to hold it against you either way, and at least you get assets for it and can be better sooner. And as we're learning from the Sixers, fans care more about how good you are and how good you'll be rather than how it happened.
The Charlotte Hornets, a less interesting team. They have faltered of late, below 500 at this point. Right now, they're projected to make the playoffs, but that's looking a little tenuous. They're looking 40-42. Basically, like, whenever Cody Zeller gets injured, they just go into a massive tailspin. Another team that getting a crap ton out of Kemba Walker, but not really any other upside talent on the roster. What is their goal? Like, you put one of the sections you have is motivations. What are the Charlotte Hornets' motivations right now?
Be relevant, make sure they make the playoffs, and ideally put themselves in a position to have that similar capacity moving forward. You and I have discussed the idea before of them being a fascinating Rudy Gay target. The problem there is matching salary, but Charlotte has so few tools other than their first round picks to get
better. Be clear, if you didn't listen to that episode, by the way, the idea is, we know that Gay can't play this year. The idea is they would acquire him and then just hope, like, get his bird rights, re-sign him for next year, hopefully at a bit of a discount. But you know, is Rudy Gay going to want to stay in Charlotte unless they really pay him through the nose? You know, it's risky, but that's what the idea would be in acquiring him. We know that. Correct. He can't play it all this year.
And the reason why Charlotte, I started going after this before, the reason why they want to do that is because it's really hard once you reach the point where you don't have cap flexibility. It's really hard to get better once you're already good, because they're not going to be bad enough to get quality draft picks. They're not going to pull free agents because all they have is the mid-level exception, and they have a small trade exception for Troy Daniels, so they're not going to get much in that direction either. So you have to take some swings, and there aren't any perfect answers. If they were, they would have already done it. So my opinion would be, try something out. And then the other player that looms in this whole conversation, because he is their piece of theoretical matching salary, is Jeremy Lamb.
Yeah, he's been out injured of late. It's been well documented that Clifford doesn't really like playing him, even though he's had some moments of effectiveness. One thing that would tantalize me if I were Charlotte's front office right now, like Roy Hibbert could be another matching salary as well, as could Haas, although he's under contract for next year as bad salary. Hibbert, only $5 million this year, expires at the end of the year. One thing that would tantalize me is I think their starting lineup is actually pretty decent. And they just get killed whenever they have these backup bigs on the floor and backup wings to and point guard to another extent. But if they could just get a backup big who could play, maybe they're looking a lot better. Maybe they're at least are as good in quality as a team like Atlanta or the Wizards. They're not that far away from having played really well earlier in the year. I don't know what their record is when Zeller plays more than a certain number of minutes, but I'm guessing it's probably pretty decent. So if they could just mitigate the fact that all of their backup bigs are terrible, now maybe they're not going to acknowledge that because one of those guys is Frank Kaminsky and he is the apple of the organization's eye, at least for a little bit longer. Is there anyone that you think might be available just kind of for a lower rung move? You know, second round pick type of move. They have an extra second coming from Memphis from that Courtney Lee deal. I think that's what it's from. Anyone who pops out to you that you would want them to pursue?
How would you feel about Kosta Koufos? I think that might be selling a little bit low for him, considering Charlotte's second isn't going to be great. But in terms of contract and role, he's about perfect.
Yeah, I don't think that the Kings would want to give him up. As we talked about before, I can't remember when that was, that he actually, I mean, like, the Kings aren't going to do any better for an $8 million a year contract than Kosta Koufos. One intriguing name, we mentioned him at the start of the show, is Brandon Wright. The Grizzlies have plenty of bigs. Their backup center is Zach Randolph. Wright is under contract for next year as well. If he can get back, play a little bit, show he's healthy, he might be someone that they could look at, give them a little bit more of an above-the-rim pick-and-roll finisher, play center, but hopefully he won't get killed too badly defensively. Like, he might be a name that they could look at. They still, I don't think they've used their room exception yet, so they could be in the sweepstakes there, but nobody else really. And maybe if Tiago Splitter could somehow get healthy, someone like him from the Hawks, but you know, I wouldn't want to count on him either. Really, other than that, not a ton of kind of lower end backup bigs who aren't playing for contenders already. Maybe like Willie Reed from Miami, you could look at. He is a player option for next year. He's going to be 27 already. He's someone who might be able to help them a little bit. If Detroit really falls out of it, Aaron Baines, they could look at him maybe because he has a player option for next year. Detroit seems convinced that he's going to opt out. That's about it. Not a ton of great options there for them to upgrade on kind of a lower level deal like the one we'd be talking about.
Yeah, I haven't put a ton of thought into the backup bigs that don't have horrible contracts, but you're right that even though there are a lot of bigs on the market, that is a pretty specific niche that is hard to fill.
Nick Young could be another guy. Maybe give them a little bit more off.
Oh, that would just be
off
wonderful.
The bench.
So get Nick Young, get not only to see Nick Young probably opt out, but to see him get traded for a small asset would be an all-time change in value.
Yeah, and I wouldn't mind too if they just on that second unit. We've said this before. Try just Kaminsky at center. Maybe bring MKG back in to play at the four and just go a lot smaller and try to juice the offense a little bit. But that, of course, assumes that Zeller is healthy. That's about it for them, I think. Nothing really more to talk about there. Hard to imagine that. I mean, maybe if they really fall out of it and play poorly, they might try to move like Nick Batum, but I don't think so because he like took a discount to stay there. He wanted to be there. So I wouldn't see that.
It's a bad look for a franchise. I was thinking about that today with Sean Devaney's reporting about the potential of the Magic trading Serge Ibaka and how there's a fundamental difference between trading a guy that you traded for and trading a guy who signed with you like Pau Gasol or Nicola Batum.
Let's get to Miami here. The motivations seem to be pretty clear. I mean, they have won now. What was it? Seven straight?
And they're playing Brooklyn tonight, so it'll probably be eight.
Yeah, but they're still not going to make the playoffs. That seems very unlikely. Maybe they can just get on fire. They have so many teams to pass. The smoke and mirrors have to dissipate here at some point.
Well, and what are they getting from that? Is that enough to get to make them the destination for free agents with their potential max slot? I don't think so.
Yeah, but I mean, Eric Spoelstra is a competitor. They have competitors on this roster. I mean, I don't know that they necessarily have a choice in the matter.
That's
unless
true.
They're just going to move on from Dragic, we've talked about Dragic before. He was the piece that a lot of people were saying doesn't make sense here. He's a little bit older for their timeline, but they still do harbor these dreams of doing something in free agency this summer. Nobody's going to want to come there unless Dragic is on the team. But, you know, if you squint hard, I thought that even if they had stayed healthy, like they're starting to play more like the team I thought they would be this year when I picked their over 34 and a half wins, even knowing that Bosch was out. They're going to have, if they are able to remove Bosch from their books by the long-term injury exclusion, my projection is that they would have $37 million in space. They could stretch McRoberts, get to over $40 million. And then if they moved on from Dragic, who's making $17 million this year or next year, that gets them up to $57 million in space. That's a lot. But in theory, Dragic, Whiteside, Winslow, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, that is a decent enough core where if you're a good free agent, maybe you come there. I mean, not the top of the market guys, but they could fill in around them and maybe they're back in the playoffs. In the East, and you can talk yourself into them being a 4 or 5 seed with good coaching, playing great defense, that kind of thing. They at least got to take their swing at the Gordon Haywards and Blake Griffins of the world. They're going to strike out very likely, but at least give that a shot. And then if you don't get anywhere to where you can really be competitive next year, to where you can realistically be back in the playoffs, then maybe I think is the time to move Dragic. It would take a pretty overwhelming offer, like the one that brought him to Miami to begin with, that the Heat made, to make me want to move him before the deadline.
I would also be listening, probably not going to have a deal happen on Hassan Whiteside. Considering what I just said about trading a guy who you signed, I think Whiteside's a little bit different just because of his unique circumstance with Miami and the fact that they paid him so much money to stay. But Whiteside turns 28 before the start of the offseason, so he's actually more in line with Dragic than many think just because he had that long odyssey before he made it to stardom. Or whatever he is, not stardom. But but that is a different place than most of the guys that you would think about as the other core of Miami. You know, Justice Winslow is still young, and Tyler Johnson's still young, Josh Richardson's still young. So you listen, you're probably not going to get the right deal, but Miami also has the justifiable belief that cap space is more valuable for them than other teams. So you listen, and if the right thing comes along, you do it, but probably not. And the other reason why Miami is central to the trade deadline is because how they responded to the offseason, to losing Dwayne Wade and everything else, was signing a bunch of guys to one or one-ish year contract. And if they're going to fall off, they might as well try to sell on as many of them as they can to get some sort of assets back before they leave as free agents, because they have non-bird rights on all of them anyway.
James Johnson, the most enticing of those. He's making $4 million this year. Deion Waiters,
Eastern Conference Player of the Week, Deion Waiters.
Likely will not exercise his $3 million player option for next year. And they would have to use cap space, I think, as you said, to re-sign all these guys. So, and Willie Reed was another one that we mentioned. There is part of the beauty of that is maybe you could even package together two or three of those guys. They're not making that much combined. Take back some relative flotsam salary. And maybe if you put all three of them together, you might be able to get like a first round pick from somebody. I mean, I think Johnson, he's going to be 30.
Wouldn't that have been a better move for Miami than Korver?
To get all three of those dudes? Well, yeah. You mean a better move for Cleveland?
Right.
They will not be taking Deion Waiters back. That's
right. But
sure.
But the general concept of like James Johnson,
Willie Reed and James Johnson, I think. But you know, even when that deal was made, Johnson had not been playing as well, and Korver certainly is a big character guy. Gravity. I agree though. I think James Johnson in theory could give them more what they need, but Johnson also is not the headiest or most intelligent defender either, despite his athleticism. That can be an issue, but. I mean, are you in the mode with Johnson, Waiters, these guys? I mean, I think you probably should be, if only just to like get them off your team and lose more.
Right.
unless you want to say, yeah.
Like, why?
I mean, I think good rookie. Yeah. So, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So the options to me there with a lot of those guys, especially James Johnson, is trade them or buy them out a couple days later. So why not trade them?
Yeah. I mean, if I can even just get some crappy asset or just even someone who is under contract for next year, even if he's not really that good. worker who's making the minimum, like that sort of thing. I mean, I guess the only reason to keep them would be, hey, let's win as much as possible, and then we're more attractive to free agents. But you're probably more attractive to free agents if you don't make the playoffs, if you just get a really awesome rookie instead. I mean, so I don't think that really makes a huge deal one way or the other. So I would be willing to, anything that's not tied down at this point, you know, Derek Williams is probably pretty worthless. They'll probably buy him out. He hasn't been playing at all. He's making $4.6 million. Another guy who I think probably won't end the season on the roster. And then just try to get more minutes for guys like Rodney Magruder and Okaro White. Maybe they can bring up Briante Weber again from Sioux Falls. See if you can develop some more of those guys as well, and maybe get another one of these hits on minimum guys that they've been so good at. Should we move on to Orlando?
Sure. I'll also mention that they could try to sell on Derek Williams and Luke Babbitt too, other guys along the same lines.
Well, selling requires that someone is going to buy them.
Someone might claim Luke Babbitt.
I guess so. Yeah, no, that's probably true.
Oh, actually, there is one more thing I wanted to mention, which is this. Yeah. I understand why they're doing it. I wrote a piece on the Sporting News for why they could do it the other way. But Chris Bosch, if assuming they try to get the injury exclusion on him this league year, would actually, from the last time I did the math, would actually put them below the floor. So there's nothing wrong with that, but they could be in an unusual circumstance where they could try to do some magic there. Maybe even if they have some guys in their D-League system that they really like, to try something unusual to give them a different kind of contract.
Well, I think at least under the current system, this, I'm still wrapping my head around the new CBA. I think it might be changing the new CBA. But if they're paying him, he still counts towards the salary floor.
Oh, you might be right. Yeah, I'll have to go back and look. This will be an inspiration. Look for a tweet for me later in today or tomorrow.
But yeah, and they will not waive Bosch until after March 1st,
right?
Because the chance of him signing on, that will prevent him from signing on with another team that'd be a playoff team and playing in the playoffs once it's after March 1st. So they don't want to take that risk that could somehow happen. And if he can't, he doesn't come back on until he plays again for another team. And that can't happen, obviously, until next year. So they at least are guaranteeing that they will have his space to use over the summer by waiting until March 1st. And of course, when I say play again for another team, he has to play at least 25 games for his new team before his salary would come back on for the Heat. Quick break here to talk about movement watches. I have one. My girlfriend has one. My mom bought one for herself. She bought one for her niece, my cousin. We all really like them. They start at just $95 at a department store for a similar quality watch. You're looking at $400 to $500. And the reason why they can do it so much less expensively is because they're able to cut out the middleman and sell directly online. That's the beauty of podcast advertising. You can get the word out about your product without having to also pay retailers so that people see it in stores. They've got free shipping and free returns as well, but you can get a great idea of what all their really stylish watches look like on their website. Go to mvmtwatches.com/capspace and just scroll down the list. I mean, they're really some beautiful ones. I have the gunmetal sandstone watch that I really like. If you are an international listener, some of our sponsors don't work internationally, but Movement certainly does. They've sold over 500,000 watches in 160 countries. It's classic design, quality construction, styled minimalism. For a long time, I didn't have a watch because I would just look at my phone to tell the time, but I realize now that I'm a real adult, I probably needed a watch, and Movement Watches has been fantastic for me. And I think you'll really like it as well. Also a great gift for your Valentine, male or female. So the way to get started with them, again, movementwatches.com, mvmtwatches.com/capspace is that URL. Join the movement. But let's get to Orlando. You mentioned that report that they are at least listening now on Serge Ibaka, as they should be. They're 3-12 in their last 15 games. They are not going to make the playoffs. They're not going to pretend to make the playoffs. Ibaka, another one in this division. What is it going to take? And what is it worth to be able to re-sign him? How much is it going to cost to re-sign him? There's also the issue of having to save some face as well. I mean, I think it's good that they're at least listening on Ibaka now and not as worried about that particular aspect. What's the price for Ibaka to part with them if you're Orlando?
Victor Oladipo, the number 11 pick, and Arsenio Yusova.
I'm talking about now. We are... We assume that Orlando understands like how sunk costs work.
Right. I think they would like to get at least an intriguing flyer or some sort of value pick, you know, for late first round pick, I think is realistic. You're not getting a lottery selection for Serge Ibaka, especially considering he's going to be expensive, just like Paul Millsap, and is not as good as Paul Millsap. What team is willing to offer that without assuming they don't have certainty on retaining him is an open question. You know, would you make a similar offer for Ibaka like you would for Millsap, right? If you were Toronto?
No, Paul Millsap is a top 30 player in the NBA. Serge Ibaka is not that anymore. Defensively, he has not been the player that he was 2-3 years ago. If he still were that player, then I think the price would be much higher. But he's kind of, you know, it's not really clear that he has the athleticism to play center anymore, at least not with a lot of athletes around him, like in that short-lived Megadeth lineup in Oklahoma City last year. It is interesting though too, because Orlando, if they move on from Ibaka, could get to almost $30 million in space despite their spending spree from last year. Not that they necessarily are going to be a great free agent destination. Again, that also would open them up to play more of Aaron Gordon again at the four offensively. They also have supposedly been looking for a wing who can score. Never had anyone like that on the roster before. But wings who can score are pretty... you know who I think would be great for them that they might want to try to target, and someone that they could maybe try to extend this offseason is Will Barton. I think he could be a good sixth man for them, give them some scoring off the bench.
I like it. I'm on board. And so I was just...
Again, what's the price? Is it a first rounder? Like, you know, that seems like too much for him, right?
It does. And the Magic,
especially when you're Orlando and they're going to have their first rounders are going to be good first rounders, presumably for the foreseeable future.
Exactly. And they don't know what they're getting from that Lakers pick because we still don't know what's going on with that. And that's 2019, so it's still a little ways away. So this isn't entirely Magic related, but I still think it's fascinating that if I was thinking about what if Jeff Green had signed with the Clippers instead of going to the Magic, that he would have almost definitely been a part of these Carmelo rumors, but he would have had the right to veto a trade if it had been a one-year contract.
Yeah, I don't know where to go with that one. Sorry, man.
That's okay.
that's too far attenuated from the Orlando Magic.
No. That's fine. I had his name on the list because I figured maybe somebody would be interested in Jeff Green, and then my brain just starts running. So my brain started running. But let's get into a more practical possible trade guy, which is Nick Vucevic, who has been good this year in a specific role. He is reasonably paid, but it is an oversaturated market. I don't know that I would trust him as a starter. And there isn't really a team that is just screaming out with a need for somebody like him.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who that would be that
like
really
Charlotte,
could benefit.
Charlotte would really use him. Like Charlotte would benefit from him a lot, especially when for these times when Cody Zeller is out. But Orlando would want assets back, and Jeremy Lamb is not enough of an asset.
No, I mean, Vucevic, for all his flaws in this market, especially when you're a team like Orlando, whose cap space has not gone very far these last few years, you can't just give him up for something that's not that great like that. There would have to be a draft pick probably thrown in. I mean, is there any team out there that you think would be worth giving up a first rounder or a good young guy for Vucevic that he could really make a difference for?
Not off the top of my head.
I mean, I think he would help Charlotte a lot if Jan Mahinmi can't return this year. I mean, that'll be an interesting... We're talking about... We'll get to this on the Wizards, too. Presumably, by the All-Star break, it'll become clear whether Mahinmi really can return this year. And if not, I think they're going to need an upgrade on Jason Smith to fortify that bench, although Smith has been okay this year. As far as teams that really could use Vucevic, like... I'm thinking about teams that just like can't score at all on their second unit and also really are trying to be good right now. And not a ton come to mind. Maybe the Pels feel like... I don't think he would be that good there. I like AD at center. All of their defensive strides that they've made would take a pretty big U-turn there.
It's not a good use of resources for Minnesota, even though I could see him benefiting from playing with their second unit and dabbling with starters, but paying Jang and everything else doesn't make that make sense.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not really sure what's out there, what team it would make sense to give up a first round pick for Nick Vucevic at this point. And if you're not getting that, what's the point then if you're Orlando? Green, I don't think, is going to get them anything. He seems like more of a buyout type of candidate guy. I mean, if they really like what he's given them, they could just try to re-sign him, but I don't... hopefully they don't feel that way. Yeah, I just don't expect a ton of movement from them other than Ibaka. And so are you saying that you would do it with Ibaka for even kind of a crappy first?
I'd like a crappy first and a lottery ticket of a player. But pragmatically, unless they think he's going to... I don't even know. Even if he says he's going to re-sign, I wouldn't want to sign him on his next contract. So why not? I mean, yeah, you look bad, but at least you get something.
Yeah, the idea... He just is not that defensive force anymore. He has not been a part of the solution for them defensively. I mean, like their defense is probably, to me this year, might be the biggest disappointment of any individual offense or defense in the entire NBA.
Yeah. That's certainly a fair point. I think you can make that argument considering the talent that they have and how much they put in terms of resources into that, and it's just absolutely not delivered. Total spitball. Their future is looking bright, and they have plenty of talented big men. But if you could put enough salary filler together, if you were the Utah Jazz, would you throw the 30th pick in this draft over to them for Ibaka as a rental to be kind of like your super sub upside guy in case Favors is not what he was?
The 30th pick? Sure. I mean, that's, why not? Just but they don't seem like a team that really necessarily could use him that much. I think that, you know, where I would like him a lot actually is Milwaukee.
Yep.
They, like, play him there too. Play him at center, especially if you could get, I mean, I don't think Orlando would take back Greg Monroe. I mean, maybe it could be the type of thing where, and they don't think they're going to want anything with Plumlee either. Orlando might be interested in John Henson as a rim protector. I mean, maybe you could structure something where you get Ibaka for this year, you dump one of Plumlee or Henson on Orlando, and then you really kind of pay for that privilege as well. If you're Milwaukee,
take on DJ Augustine's contract.
You'd probably throw in Rashad Vaughn for them as well. Yeah, that might be interesting. You take, like, maybe there's a deal to be had there, because even if Ibaka is not that much of a force protecting the rim anymore, the spacing that he still does some of that. Giannis is also excellent at that as well. The spacing that he would provide from the five would be excellent. They have enough length around him that it could work okay. They might re-sign him because they're going to be capped out anyway. You can add some talent in. Maybe since Jason Kidd isn't a huge Teletovic guy, I think Teletovic actually could help Orlando a lot, give them some desperately needed shooting. Maybe he could be a part of that deal. That might be something to think about. I mean, again, we're probably going too far down the rabbit hole here. I mean, Toronto, another team, if they're not going to get Millsap, certainly would have interest in Ibaka. He would be, I don't know if he's actually an upgrade on Patrick Patterson at this point. You never know, too. I mean, he could just be like, maybe the fact that he's just in Orlando and it's been a weird situation and he's been playing in some of these crappy lineups, like, maybe we're underrating what he is at this point. But just, I mean, the fact that they haven't been able to defend this year and that his block rate has declined so much that he has not been the same since he had that knee injury, all that is very, very concerning to me. And I would be loath to pay for what he did 3 years ago at this point, even if he is only 27.
I just watched him get blown by Carl Anthony Towns on a play, so it certainly did not inspire confidence.
Yeah, but I think there are teams that would want him. I think he's certainly better as far as like a late first round pick than some of the guys who got traded in 2015 for late first round picks. I think the league may have learned from that. But if I think he could help you. He's worth the flyer. His shooting can help your offense a fair amount, especially if you have some other dynamic players. I mean, they should be able to get a first for him, hopefully not take anything back. That's too bad. He's only making $12 million, so matching the salary won't be too difficult. Be interesting to see what's out there for him, and is a late first enough for them to just move on from him? And the other advantage too, of course, is that they could be bettering their draft pick. They're another team that really could be benefiting from tanking more than they are. But of course, you know, the embattled front office is another concern there. And Frank Vogel is the kind of guy who definitely is a fighter. Let's move on to Washington though, to finish these guys, this division out here. This is a massive division. There's a lot of players that could be moved at the deadline out of this division.
However, very few of those players are on the Washington Wizards, and the Wizards actually have a pretty clean set of stuff, so they're over the cap and below the tax, so they don't have to really worry in that way. They have very little flexibility moving forward due to the money they're paying John Wall, Bradley Beal, and everyone else. They have all their own firsts and no extra first round picks, and they have their own second for the next couple of years. So really, if they wanted to make a move, they certainly could because they have that first round pick. However, they do not have a ton of logical salary filler because a lot of their guys that are in that $7 to $8 million range have multi-year contracts like Andrew Nicholson, who is a net negative at this point.
And it also doesn't really make any sense for them to pay somebody to take some of these longer term contracts because they're not going to have cap space anyway. I mean, Otto Porter, $14 million cap hold. He's going to be making over $20 million a year. You would imagine almost certainly after this offseason as a restricted free agent, having a wonderful year. So they're going to be capped out forever and ever for eternity forever. And so why bother paying a bunch? I mean, unless you're really starting to worry about the tax, why bother paying a bunch here to get rid of guys like Nicholson or Mahimi? I mean, those are the two that are looking pretty untradeable at this point, unless you really throw something in. What do they need, though, if they want to upgrade? I mean, I think backup center certainly is one. They could use another wing who can play as well. I mean, Satoransky, Kelly Oubre is kind of more playing as a four now. If you could have like another wing who could just play a little bit, give you some athleticism off the bench to upgrade on Sheldon McClellan.
Point guard of the future, backup would be nice, but not a priority.
And Trey Burke is playing well enough now, and these guys are looking like they're certain to make the playoffs, so you're thinking about what do you need in the playoffs. This could be another decent, like, Brandon Wright destination. I mean, he's just on my brain right now because he's returning to play, and probably don't want to count on him being healthy either. Maybe I'm overselling where he
probably
is.
Probably don't want to count on him being healthy. Yes, that would be fair.
But, you know, another Willie Reed potential destination. A lot of backup bigs, but I don't see... I mean, this year's first round pick probably going to be, you know, around like 17, 18, 19. They need those picks because they're going to be an expensive team without much to do. But you also look at the timeline here, Wall 26. So whoever you draft with your first round pick, probably not going to contribute for two or three more years. And they're playing so well that maybe you think if we could just add one more piece who's actually good. I mean, remember, they got Markieff Morris, who's pretty decent for a first round pick. Maybe it doesn't just have to be crappy expiring contracts. Maybe it could be a real player who's under contract going forward.
Like the team that I think of with them, and Kevin Pelton and I think floated this on a Real Jam Radio podcast a couple months ago. I think Pelton deserves credit for it, is Will Barton as being a possibility for them. But also Denver has enough of those small assets, you know, guys that aren't key parts of their future or like parts of their
present.
Darrell
Arthur would be outstanding
right
in Washington.
So maybe
like, he would be a great guy for them.
First and enough salary to make it work for Darrell Arthur and Will Barton. I could totally see a trade like that being beneficial for both teams.
Yeah, I like that one. But that's the kind of thing we'd be thinking of, where their efforts to rebuild the bench kind of failed this offseason. They spent a lot of money, so now they might have to spend a pick. But especially for a franchise that's never gotten past the second round, I mean, Toronto is going to be on the wane. Boston, you have to imagine they'll be taking a step forward, but who knows what they're going to do in free agency. Like, it could be a much more incremental growth period for them, as they just, you know, their timeline could be out two or three or four years based on them just using these draft picks they have. Cleveland, probably not going to beat them next year, but if they could just get like one or two more guys who are pretty good on this team, you know, maybe they could be talking about a potential Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, after all, one really well-respected commenter picked them as having the potential to be first in the East last year.
And then gave them the kiss of death like three different times last year. That was the only year I didn't buy into the Wizards, and I love that it was the one year that you did. But yeah, I still like the core of what Washington
does. I did
does.
Have them in the playoffs this year, by the way, just to be clear.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But I still like the foundations of what they do. Wall, Beal, Marcin Gortat, they have talent. Otto Porter's having a wonderful year. So you might as well see what you can do with it, and a middling first round pick, because it doesn't look like they're going to get, like, there's a reasonable chance for them to get into the top 10 or so. And, you know, those players are wonderful, but if you can't get in there and they're not going to package something to get up there on draft night, why not try to get a combination of players or a single player that can make you better, ideally this year and maybe the next year or two after that?
In the long term, with Gortat playing probably an unsustainable minutes load at this point, if Mahimi is not really going to be able to play, they've got to find another center who can really be their starter going forward. That might be another potential avenue for them to look at is just acquiring that long-term starter at center beyond now, if in fact Mahimi is not going to be able to return. And you think you'd have to think that even if he can, he's going to be a, you know, a 15-minute a game guy with how bad his knees have been so far this year, and then counting on him to be more than that beyond now, it wouldn't be very smart either.
Fortunately for them, if they were willing to spend the money on the position, there are an absolute ton of backups who could maybe be a little bit more centers in the NBA right now, so they will be able to find those players should they identify that as a need.
Yeah, and if it's someone who can be under contract for a little bit longer, then maybe you're willing to give up that pick as well. Especially, I mean, really, their offense has been excellent. They need to improve on defense, get a good defensive center. All right, are we done here?
I will note, since this is our Monday night, Tuesday morning podcast, that while we were recording, the Philadelphia 76ers beat the Kings, which, as the czar of pick protection, was very enjoyable because that, I mean, obviously I want every team to do well, but this makes the pick swap a more possible thing, and the whole situation is ridiculous.
All right, well, thanks so much for listening. Don't forget our sponsors today, Movement Watches, MVMTwatches.com/capspace is that URL to get 15% off a beautiful watch, and Lyft, get three rides up to $10 each using that CapSpace code via the free Lyft app. We'll be back with more of these coming soon. Till then.